Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 52 for Friday, 16th of March, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and usually I'm joined by a different guest host to help me discuss what's going on, what we can do about it, and so forth. But this week, for various reasons, that's not going to happen, but there are a couple of things that we thought had better get covered quickly before we move off to next week. Because to start with, there are two electoral contests taking place on Saturday, tomorrow. There is the Batman by-election and there is the South Australian election. In relation to Batman, it's obviously the ALP versus the Greens. We have had a ridiculous weekend of nonsense about core flutes, and there was a, if you haven't been following it and you were fortunate enough to, or if in fact you muted the word core flute, there's a ridiculous beat up where, because at a pro-refugee protest, which the Greens were present, because of course not supporting the persecution of refugees is one of their primary policy positions, and it's one that differentiates them from Labor. At the protest, there was a former refugee who had a sign up that had a line through Ted Kearney's face, and it said, "Close the camps." And so according to the ALP people, that was sexism. It was worse than what was the Ditch the Witch sign that was behind Tony Abbott and his Liberal colleagues some years ago about Julia Gillard. And that also, if it was a core flute, it was theft, and the police should prosecute not the person who allegedly took the core flute, but the Greens for standing near it. And I'm not quite sure how drawing a line through a candidate's face and saying close the camps is a personal attack, let alone a sexist attack. It seems it's personal in the sense that, yeah, it is saying don't vote for this candidate in an election, but it seems to me that using the words close the camps makes it pretty clear that it's about policy, not about anything else. And there's some other stuff on the other side where supposedly people are going around saying namaste from the Labor camp, saying namaste to Alex Bethal as if it was some kind of racist attack on her for not being Anglo-Saxon or something, which is, again, weird. But the thing that bothered me most about the Greens-Labor contest in Batman this week were two stories that came out on Thursday. One of them was following a story in The Age where the journalist says that he was told by a Greens staffer that he was fucking finished. And he starts off the article with the quote. He doesn't give any other descriptions from that conversation. So I don't know what that was a response to. But the bottom line is that's not really an acceptable thing for anybody to be saying, and I expect better from the Greens. And when I rang Bant's office and Dennis Tyler's offices on Thursday, they really didn't know how to handle it, and they weren't sure what they were going to do. They were saying, oh, well, we'd rather focus on the policy stuff. And I'm like, well, you're not going to. Green supporters aren't going to be happy with you having staff members threatening people. You need to deal with it. You need to find out whether, I mean, I presume that it did happen because presumably the journalist's got a recording. It would be a big claim to make if they're lying, if they're making it up. And if it did happen, they need to find out who bloody did it and take them off the campaign. It's not acceptable. Surely the Greens have internal policy which says you can't be abusive on behalf of the Greens, you can't demonise people, you can't threaten people on behalf of the Greens. And presumably the person who did it would be reasonably senior, because that it's an odd thing for a junior member in a campaign to threaten a journalist like that. So maybe that's the reason why nothing's happened, but that makes the Greens, that means that they're behaving like any of the old parties, and I expect better from a party I'm going to vote for. So frankly, pull your socks up, like deal with it properly. Don't pretend that it can just go away and that that's okay and it's just part of doing politics. It's not, it's damaging to you. It lessens people's ability to advocate for you. It's extremely counterproductive. And I don't know what the excuse could possibly be. I think that the Greens need to say, we've dealt with it. This is what the person was not authorised to behave like that. And this is how we've dealt with it. It needs to be done properly. And the other thing was, obviously, the big story from the week in terms of economic policy is Labor deciding that it will undo the staggering rort that is cash refunds for dividend credits. So if I understand it correctly, which I think I do, the general idea is that a company pays tax on its profits, it then distributes those profits by way of dividends to shareholders, and then a credit is handed to the shareholders so that if they're paying tax on that income, they don't double the tax that the company already, so the company already paid some company tax. They're credited that amount, you know, the amount of that company tax that ascribes to the portion of the profit that they've got, and they're given a credit for that. Now, they should still be paying tax on the other income, but they don't pay tax on, they don't double that tax. Now, of course, the rest of us, when we get income from an employer who has presumably paid tax, we still pay tax on the money that we get. Like, money goes around the economy all the time. This idea of double taxation pretends that there's some kind of magical money that like gets taxed once and then just disappears. But money moves. Governments tax it as it goes from person to person. I'm not really sure why it is that people receiving that income shouldn't also pay tax on it. In any case, that's a system that Keating put in place in the 80s. What changed and what makes it completely indefensible is that Howard and Costello in 2000 changed it so that if you have no taxable income, so you're not paying tax, but you have shares, you have assets, you have these huge assets, but you're not paying tax. Therefore, a dividend credit doesn't benefit you because you can't reduce tax that you're not paying. So they figure that, and this is the system that's been in place since 2000, originally voted for by Labor. I'm going to assume the Greens voted against it, but and if they did, then I really think that's what the Greens should be saying, but we'll come back to that in a sec. For some reason, we have a system where you're not paying any tax, but because you own shares and the company pays some tax, the taxpayer gives you money. You never paid tax. The company paid tax on profit, but you personally have a low income. So you get to have your the part of the tax that the company paid back to you by the taxpayer. So you have pensioner A who has no assets, no money, and receives the pension. That's all they get from the taxpayer. But if they're lucky enough to also own some shares, the taxpayer gives them more money. It's insane. The Australian and all the Murdoch press have gone absolutely feral on the idea. And they're trying to portray, they're doing the same thing that they do with negative gearing, where they say, oh, a significant proportion of the people who benefit from negative gearing only have taxable incomes of under 80,000, or some of them have taxable incomes of zero. Yeah. Because the whole point of negative gearing is that you get to write off your losses against your income. And so you can be a person who's earning a significant income, but if you set your properties up right, you can reduce your taxable income to very low. And then you're like, see, look, I'm a poor person because I'm not paying. I reduced my taxable income and I'm not paying tax. But you're not a poor person. You've just been able to set up your income, take advantage of loopholes in the tax code so that your much higher income looks smaller. And so they're pretending that they're these vulnerable pensioners who rely on these credits. Well, you know what? There are vulnerable pensioners who don't get these credits. And it seems to me that ownership of shares is not a reasonably equitable basis for deciding who gets this bonus cash from the taxpayer and who doesn't. Oh, you're a bit richer and have some shares. Oh, yeah, have some more money. No, that's ridiculous. So, of course, the government's gone feral on it. They're trying to pretend that Labor's bashing poor, innocent old pensioners. Labor's currently seeking their ground, and the Greens have come in and sort of tried to be a bit clever about it and not make a call, which is pretty unimpressive, to be honest. I don't know why the Greens don't stand up and say, if they're worried about being boxed into a corner and agreeing to something before they have the detail, they can say, we agree with the idea in principle, we'll wait for the detail from the ALP, but obviously we're going to vote for any policy that shuts down rorts for wealthy people at the expense of ordinary taxpayers. And the other thing the Greens could say is, assuming it's true, we voted against it in 2000 and have been opposed to it ever since. There you are. You've got credibility on the subject if you can make that claim. And that's what I would expect a Progressive Party to do. And if you didn't vote against it in 2000, I'd like to bloody know why. But they haven't really got on top of it. So One of the things I want from the Greens is to be forcing the ALP to try and bring in more progressive policy to pull them back from the right. And if the ALP is doing that, then that's great. But it's the sort of thing I don't want to ever have to choose between an ALP doing something progressive and the Greens opposing something progressive. The Greens need to be at least as progressive as the ALP. The point of them is bringing, you know, either ALP comes back and starts representing progressive voters, or, you know, the Greens get elected and we get to pull back on it. Now, with tomorrow, I do think it is important that the Greens get up. One additional factor that I hadn't realised before, I hadn't thought about it before, is that if you want to debate something in Parliament, you have to have somebody who can second your motion. And at the moment, there's only one Greens member of the House of Reps. So the 10% of people who vote Greens don't get, you know, 15 out of the 150 seats. We're lucky to get one because of the dodgy single member electorate system. But notwithstanding that, we do have one Greens member of the lower house, Adam Bat. If we were to get a second one, Alex Batal, then they could second each other's motions. We could actually force the Parliament to debate these issues, particularly ones that the Coalition and Labor don't want to debate, like refugees. So there is a significant benefit to the Greens getting up in Batman. And realistically, I can't see there being any kind of progressive policy that Labor proposes and puts to the Parliament that the Greens actually then oppose. The day they do that is the day I stop supporting them. But I don't believe that this party is going to do that. I don't think that the Greens are the same as the Democrats. The Democrats betrayed us in 1998 by promising to oppose the GST and then voting for it with what they felt was some concessions, but they promised they would vote against it. We relied on it and they betrayed us. And as a result, they collapsed because none of us voted for them again. The Greens know that the Greens don't have that bi-directional sort of twisted split policy position that the Democrats had, where they tried to be between Labor and the Liberals as they had been originally positioned on one part, and also progressive in the way that they were when they were first formed in the 70s, before Labor and the Liberals both lunged to the right. And so the Democrats, before they died, had this sort of split where part of them felt that the important thing was where their position between Labor and the Liberals, and so they should move right along with them. And the others felt that they should stick to their original policy ideas and positions, which now were on the left of Australian politics. And as a result, you know, the party didn't have an identity and collapsed. Now, the Greens aren't like that. They have a progressive identity, but they could certainly do a better job of advocating for it, as set out by those two things in the latter half of this week. And I'd really hope better for them. And, you know, it's already all easy to do what's called the armchair quarterbacking. You know, I'm not in their political office running these things. But when your staffers are saying on the phone, well, you know, this is only a news story and we haven't really got on top of it yet. You know, politics moves fast. If you're doing it, you need to have an approach figured out pretty quickly. Like, they don't need to, you know, try the whole case, but they can say, this is what we believe in, you know, restate principles. They can, in terms of both the staffer being abusive and saying, that's unacceptable and we'll determine whether there's truth in the allegations or not and we'll deal with it. And in the case of the ALP policy, they can say, we will be supporting progressive policy. And if that's what this turns out to be and it doesn't have unintended consequences, then we will support it. That's what I would expect from a progressive party. I don't understand why they played it the other way this week. Meanwhile, it's been a big week for Peter Dutton, the evil potato, who has gone from raiding a Tamil family at 5 in the morning. Now, this Tamil family has a daughter who's 2 and another daughter who is 9 months old, so same age almost as our daughter. Border force banging on their door at 5 in the morning, giving them 10 minutes to get out, then dragging them down to Melbourne and trying to shut them on a plane before they were stopped by courts. That's appalling. Now, this is not a family who, you know, they were on the run or anything. This is a family that was built into the community in Queensland, and there were still legal processes in place regarding whether they could stay or not. And the government waited till the day after the current visa expired, and instead of granting another one while the matter was considered, they raided them in the morning and tried to send them away, deport them to Sri Lanka, where people who have been allegedly associated with the Tamil Tigers are in extraordinary danger. It's just monstrous. And even if you had a legitimate basis for deporting the family, and it was, you know, all their avenues had been exhausted and we couldn't get them out any other way, why do you do it at 5 in the morning? Give them 10 minutes to get this. Like, it's That's the kind of stuff that an authoritarian, oppressive police state does, and the purpose is to disorient people, break their spirit down, and get them to, you know, sign up to things, which is what the department did. Border Force tried to get them to sign up to papers agreeing with their deportation under massive duress. They're threatening them that they wouldn't get to see each other. These are people with babies. What kind of country are we? Under Dutton, a terrible one. But on the other hand, he is not a man without compassion, because when white South African farmers are complaining that their land's being taken and they're being murdered, although the stats don't support the contention that white South African farmers are more in danger than black South African farmers, but Peter Dutton wants to rescue these white South Africans, wants to fast-track them. And it is difficult to imagine what, other than their race, is the differentiating factor. He says, oh, he wants people who will come and be part of the community and work and so forth. Well, what makes him think that people in Manus and Nauru don't want to do that? Other than, of course, you know, racism. It is a staggering approach, and it just highlights just how racist our government policy really is. And then to add to that, this week, Dutton is reported to be trying to establish a committee, or considering establishing a committee, to allow gun importers to review proposed changes to firearm regulations for, quote, appropriateness and intent. Basically, restarting the gun lobby in Australia, giving them a seat at the table. We know what the gun lobby does when it is given its head. We can see what it does in America. This is a lobby that should never be given any... It's like they have no compunction, as we see from their behaviour overseas, in doing everything in their power to corrupt the political process. There is no reason that we should be giving this lobby the power to alter Australian gun laws, particularly concerning when, just before the Tasmanian election, after such lobbying, the Tasmanian government suggested it might weaken some of the gun laws. The only thing that should be affecting our gun law policy is the impact on the community, not the impact on profits of the gun lobby. The gun lobby are not able to look at this in an impartial way. They're an industry lobby that wants to sell guns, and they should have no place at the table in determining what is appropriate security policy for the country. But Dutton's happy to invite them there. And of course, he lost his Border Force Chief Quadvleg this week for trying to get his girlfriend a job. But Quadvleg's been on this ludicrously well-remunerated holiday pay for most of the last year. Hundreds of thousands of dollars paid to this person. And you know what? It's not actually that surprising that somebody at the top of Border Force would have this entitlement attitude. Their whole approach is power and resources for us at the expense of the vulnerable that we prey on to justify these privileges. It entirely makes sense that they would consider themselves above the law and feeling that they can do what they like with the public resources, because generally they do get away with it. It's not an accident that the current laws constraining whistleblowers with respect to Border Force are so harsh. The whole point of it is so that we don't find out what they're getting up to. And yeah, weirdly enough, when there's no oversight, people become corrupt. What a brilliant system. Dutton's also calling this week to cut support for people seeking asylum. So people who are already in poverty, making it even harder for them to survive whilst their slow, drawn-out asylum seeker claims are slowly processed by the department. I guess the idea is to starve them into giving up and going home. You know, and if they get killed when they're there, well, you know, it's not the Australian government's policy problem anymore. And finally this week, we had the bonkers idea from the government that Indigenous children who need to be placed with other families, the government should be prioritising or reconsidering placing them with white families. And they didn't say non-Indigenous families. They specifically said white families, as if the whiteness is somehow some kind of guarantee of better conditions and better treatment for Indigenous people. It's almost like the people who turned their backs on the apology to the Stolen Generation didn't learn the bloody lesson. And the idea that we right now are considering this, and you have this bonkers debate on Australian morning TV on Sunrise, where they have far-right fringe people like Prue McSween, you know, the one who wanted to run Yasmin Al-Maghid down in her car, that one. A bunch of white people pontificating about what would be better policy to protect Indigenous children. Nobody from the Indigenous community. It was just basically a bunch of white people congratulating themselves that white people are better at raising children and looking after children, and that's where the children should be. It was insane, and it was broadcast in Australia in March 2018, you know, a decade after the apology to the Stolen Generations. Madness. Anyway, for those of you about to vote, we salute you if you do something compassionate with your vote. Your vote is your decision, obviously. But I'd beg you not to vote for anybody who, certainly in the federal arena, which is what Batman is, certainly not vote for somebody who will vote for the offshore detention and persecution of refugees, remembering that that entire process is morally indefensible. There is no... The entire calculus of it is trying to bully vulnerable people into staying in danger. The whole... They will never come here bit is deterrence, and it only works if we are worse to them than the countries they're fleeing from. And that's, of course, why we can't know what's going on in Nauru and Manus Island, because that's how the policies are deterrent, by making their lives even worse than the worst countries in the world. There is no way that you can be a moral person and vote for that. And I'm afraid that Jed Kearney, who may otherwise be a progressive person and maybe really laments the ALP policy that does just that to refugees, nonetheless, it has joined a party where that is their policy and will vote with the party on that policy. The ALP doesn't have a, you know, crossing the floor option. The only way that a person who is elected in Batman stands up for refugees tomorrow is if it's the candidate from the Greens. Now, I have some concerns about how the Greens have run the campaign, but the one thing I know about them from looking at how they vote in Parliament is that they vote 100% of the time for progressive policies. They do not vote for, you know, special extra powers for ASIO or to persecute refugees on offshore camps. Now, they may not have the resources to govern in their own right, but that's fine, because Parliament isn't about just the government. Parliament is about what group of people can get legislation through Parliament, and a Green member in there is just as capable of voting for good legislation as a Labour member who is part of a bigger party, except that the Greens person is more capable of voting for progressive legislation, because we know that the ALP keeps forcing its members, its parliamentarians, to vote against progressive legislation and vote for nasty conservative legislation. And that isn't going to change if there's another ALP person elected tomorrow. It will change if there's a Green. And whatever her flaws, and whatever the campaign's flaws, and whatever the Greens' flaws, the one thing you can see by looking at how they vote is that they always vote on the progressive side. And I can't say the same thing for Labour. I wish I could, but I can't, because that is simply not the case. So that's how I'd vote. Good luck with your voting and your democracy sausages. And here's hoping that what we've seen from the ALP, being willing to put up some progressive policy, that continues. I do have some concerns about how they're saying that they're going to spend that money, which is in tax cuts, and that's about the last thing we need. What we need is better spending on schools and Medicare. The fact that dental care is not part of Medicare, or hearing aids are not part of Medicare, it's ridiculous. There's plenty of things that money needs to be spent on that will significantly improve Australians' lives. Tax cuts for business or individuals are not the best ways of spending that money. So it may well be that the Greens should vote for the dividend imputation credit, the cash refund legislation from Labor, but vote against how Labor's planning to spend it, or not. Maybe Labor won't give it back in tax cuts to wealthier boomers. I'm concerned at how Labor's going to win back the boomers, and I hope that it's not in a way that undermines all the good that's done from closing down this frankly outrageous rort. We shall see. Quick drop in. This is a heartbroken Jeremy on Saturday morning. Look, I'm extremely concerned by this hideous story from last night, where apparently yesterday, Richard Di Natale, the leader of the Greens, had a real go at the ALP for the one progressive policy that they have. And he did to the ALP the thing that the ALP does to the Greens in terms of refugees, which is he gave the Conservatives cover. So in the same way as the ALP's votes in support of the Libs' brittle offshore processing, torturing refugees policies, in fact, which Labor reintroduced in 2012, doesn't just let those things happen now. It actually gives the Conservatives cover because basically they have both sides. They have the Labor Party supporting them and their lines. So stupid lines, the lies like this is a way of stopping people drowning and it's compassionate. That line is absolutely dishonest. But the ALP, by repeating it, gives it credibility. And in the same way, Di Natale yesterday gave the Conservatives cover for their bullshit attacks on the Labor Party finally doing something to wind back some of the staggering rorts that are currently given to the very wealthy at the expense of the rest of us. You know, you go to work, you pay tax on your income, you're a wealthy person who's retired, you're getting all this tax-free income, and also the taxpayer is giving you extra money for owning shares. Thanks. The Conservatives' response to this by saying, oh, it's actually low-income people who are going to be affected, when they know perfectly well that's playing funny buggers because they're only low-income in terms of low taxable income because they use these sort of systems to reduce their taxable income. They are asset-rich and they are genuinely very wealthy and they can certainly take more income. They're taking as much income as they want. They're keeping it at the level where they get to declare that they have a low income and get all these benefits. These are not people who are being paid a low income because they can't earn more. These are people who are cynically taking money in such a way, moving their money around in such a way that when they receive income, they get it tax-free and we taxpayers actually pay them money. Now, that is a bullshit line from the Conservatives. And yet, Di Natale did this. He said, we're going to look very closely at the decision by Bill Shorten and the Labor Party that has the potential to really hurt struggling pensioners. Has the potential to really hurt struggling pensioners, Richard? Really? Quote, if you're concerned about that and you want to ensure that there will be some fairness, that there is scrutiny on this legislation and that it gets amended through the Senate, well, here's your chance to do that, he said. Vote for the Greens ahead of Labor. Okay, so at that point, it's kind of like, well, you're giving them a bit of cover there, but presumably you're still going to vote for it. You're not having a real attack on it. You're just hedging your bets. Nah, because what he then follows up with is, with this pitch to right-leaning voters, here he goes, he says, those people who might be inclined to vote for one of the Conservative parties here or might be inclined to stay at home, well, here's your chance to say what you think about Bill Shorten's attack on so many people in this community. No, no, that's not, Richard, that is not a progressive party. You do not take right-wing lines smearing a progressive policy and use them to try and win votes from Conservatives. Not if you want to be a progressive party, not if you want us to be supporting you. If you try going down the Democrats' road of trying to be in both camps simultaneously, you are killing the Greens. That has to stop. Now, if I were a voter in Batman, I would be staggeringly impressed with that, and it would really give me pause. The problem, of course, is that the ALP candidate, who's the other one who might win, also is going to vote for the offshore persecution of refugees. So that's not a solution either. So I would suggest that you see if there is a progressive candidate in Batman that is running and vote one for the progressive candidate, two for the Greens and three for Labor, thereby punishing the Greens by denying them the money from your vote, punishing them for Di Natale pulling that crap, but simultaneously also not stopping them getting that candidate into Parliament so that there is a bigger voice for stopping what we're doing to refugees. Because you don't want to have voted for a candidate who supports and is going to vote for what we're doing to refugees offshore. And that's what happens if you vote Labor. But I would be if there is a progressive candidate in Batman who is neither of those people, I would be inclined to put them first, right, and punish the Greens for that kind of bullshit by not giving them a first preference. But let's still put them ahead of Labor because you still don't want to be voting for someone who persecutes refugees. And that's what the Labor Party joins the Liberals in doing. Staggeringly disappointing. All of the other Labor lines that I've heard attacking the Greens are nonsense. Like, you voted with the Liberals against the ETS. Yes, the ETS that you negotiated with the Liberals that you refused to discuss with the Greens. You refused to negotiate and the Greens end up getting a better policy out of you, which unfortunately you then did a terrible job selling and got kicked out by playing funny buggers with it before the election, after the election, hence the carbon tax promise that Gillard made and then broke, all that nonsense. But it's not the Greens. The Greens weren't doing anything conservative by voting against that. The Senate changes, well, those are totally reasonable because the ticket system was profoundly undemocratic and that had been long-term Greens policy. All these other attacks that they have about the Greens are dodgy. But this one, where Di Natale is specifically demonising a progressive policy and running Liberal Party lines attacking it, that is appalling. And the Greens can come back from that by having a different leader and repudiating that approach and not pandering to this Labor line of them being tree Tories. Because that's, I'm not voting for freaking tree Tories. And if you start doing actually conservative things, then, well, you know, I guess we're off. And we've got to form an actual progressive party. We had hoped that that was the Greens. If you're, that's not going to be the Greens, we'll go somewhere else. But it's still the Greens today. I'd still preference them ahead of Labor. I just would be looking to see if there's an alternative way rather than giving them the first preference vote, because that is, frankly, appalling. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week, hopefully with a full episode. Thank you for everybody who's rated us on iTunes. Thank you, everybody who's continued to contribute to the Patreon. Thank you, everybody who's made suggestions on angles that you'd like to see the podcast move in. We are going to work on trying to have some more expert guests in episodes coming up. Otherwise, thank you, Robin Gray, for the music, Alex Lum, for the artwork, and I'll see you all next week. Good night.